Good afternoon, Your Honor. Philip Barber, registration 9623, on behalf of Wendy or Laura Chase and Mike Sutak. Your Honor, this situation began in 1993 when Wendy Chase purchased approximately 77 acres of raw land in Larimer County to create an equestrian facility. Her dream was to build something that would allow riders of all ages and levels, from the pony club to experienced and advanced riders, to use this facility. The facility uses the entire 77 acres. There's a cross-country track around the outside of the property. There are over 150 jumps and water courses. On the inside of the property, there are barns, there are stables, there are corrals. There are many improvements that have been made by Ms. Chase over the years. Over those 15 years, Ms. Chase developed this property. And let me just go back to say that the property is about 12% of the 640-acre lease on which Ms. Chase's property and other properties are located. It is the only property in that 640 acres that has been developed for anything other than raw land, pasture. I don't believe the record showed any farming activities of any nature, and certainly no other development comparable to Ms. Chase's development. The events that take place at this property are called three-day eventing. It's a combination of dressage, equestrian jumping, and cross-country, which involves galloping horses around a track that has been specially built for that purpose at up to 50 miles an hour. Ms. Chase spent approximately $1 million developing this property after it was purchased. It is her sole livelihood, her labor of love, as we like to say. Now, the property had to qualify for this designated outside activity area. Sometimes I'll refer to it as a DOA or a DOAA. And that rule has certain numerical and day requirements. But in reality, the property is used by horse riders every day of the year, weather permitted. In 2008, so roughly 15 years after Ms. Chase acquired the property and began developing it, a company named Magpie Operating came to her and said, or approached the Oil and Gas Commission and applied for permits to drill two massive wells in the middle of her property to place compression facilities, surface equipment, storage tanks, to bulldoze roads, to dig trenches for pipelines that would, in short, destroy the property for the purposes of equestrian facilities. It would not only hurt and destroy the footing, it would create distractions and noises that would create unacceptable risks for riders and horses. Horses are fight or flight animals. Sudden noises, bad footing, can cause them to start and fall and injure themselves or injure their riders. Well, when Ms. Chase learned that these wells were suggested for the property and the other ancillary facilities, she contacted the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the COGCC, and was told that there is actually a rule that was promulgated by the COGCC, Rule 603D, that protects properties like hers, protects properties from oil and gas development where there are outside activities used a certain number of days in the year by a certain number of people. Ms. Chase filed the appropriate application with the commission. There was a hearing. She presented evidence that satisfied the requirements. Unfortunately, the commission denied her application and gave almost no reason for it. It didn't find that she had failed to meet the numerical requirements.
What did it say? You told us what they didn't say. Yes. What did they say?
They said that there were questions about whether this was the type of activity which should be covered by the rule. They said they had questions about the meaning or definition of the rule itself. And I think the third reason was they believed that there might be waste committed if the property was protected from oil and gas operations.
Now, Mr. Barber, as to your first point about whether or not this definition fit these activities, given that the rule itself talks about or gives examples of what a DOA could be, including a playground, recreation area, outdoor theater, or other place of public assembly, how is it that these equestrian activities fit within these, you know, public, you know, this seems to envision a park, a playground, something that's open to anybody, to the public at large.
And this property is open to anybody who wants to come and use it. It's not an exclusive facility. It doesn't require a membership. It's no different, frankly, than City Park Golf Course, where you have to pay a membership to go use it. It may be owned by a public entity, but still, it allows or disallows people based upon whether you can pay a fee to use it. So this is open to the public. That's not in doubt. There was an exhibit at the hearing, and I unfortunately can't remember it, that listed all of the outside areas that were available for three-day eventing, and Ms. Chase's property was listed as one of them.
Why do you suppose this is only the second application they've had since this DOA was passed? Or
I would simply be speculating, Your Honor. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
But I will say this, as oil and gas activities are more and more coming to the front range with fracking and drilling and all of the things we've read about in the newspapers, this rule will become, I think, much more used. And it could simply be that there haven't been oil and gas operations near populated areas or near areas where there are parks or other facilities. I think the one situation where there was that application involved baseball fields. So that's all I can offer to Your Honor. Well, Ms. Chase, as I said, she filed the appropriate documentation and was denied. This appeal asks the court to consider the plain and unambiguous language in the rule and to apply it as written and to grant Ms. Chase her designated outside activity area.
She, again, asking for all or nothing. What if the commission had said, you can have this DOA area as to say half of it, 35, 40 acres, the rest is agricultural?
There was discussion about that at the hearing.
Right.
And Mr. LaPore, who was Mr. Matter's predecessor, said the commission's discretion is in setting the boundary.
Right.
And the commission set no boundary.
Okay.
So the commission could have set a boundary, and it said no boundary at all. It simply disqualified the property outright.
Let me follow up and just ask about that agricultural area. It was confusing to me. There was some area where she's growing crops, yet in another part of your brief it said they're using all of it.
Correct.
What's the reality?
Picture this property is sort of divided into a two-thirds tier at the north,
okay,
and a one-third tier at the south. But also picture that the property, because it's a compressed area, a three-day venting facility typically involves a lot more acreage than is here. So what Ms. Chase, the testimony was, and Ms. Chase took the cross-country course and basically ran it serpentine through the property, that the fixed jumps and the water barriers are primarily in that upper two-thirds. The lower third has some irrigated crop, but there's also this cross-country course that runs through it. Further, there's a parking area and a tacking up and a tacking down area right next to that irrigated crop plant. And the fear of Ms. Chase and the testimony, which was really not rebutted at the hearing, was this is where the pony club kids tack up and tack down. If you have trucks coming in, these are 18-wheel trucks coming in, picking up product, driving up, somebody's going to get hurt or killed, and she'll probably have to close the area.
Changing gears, why didn't you ask for a declaratory judgment in the district court? There's an issue before us about jurisdiction. Is that a fair question, or am I
don't think it's a fair question, because it was an appeal, it was an APA appeal,
okay,
from an agency determination. I think the APA rule itself says that the district court shall treat it as if, I think, as a declaratory request for declaratory
okay
relief.
Well, then, Mr. Barber, what's your response to the point made by one of the defendants, I forget which one, that this issue of the construction of the lease is already at issue in another case pending in Larimer County.
The issue of the construction of the lease, just to remind the court, is an issue that is based upon the language in the lease, which says there shall be no operations within 200 feet of any improvement. And the cases we've cited demonstrate that simply grading property can amount to an improvement. The commission refused to hear it, not because that was pending in another case. It refused to hear it, saying it didn't have jurisdiction to do that. And we feel it does have jurisdiction.
Well, I understand that, but if the issue is already being litigated in the other case in Larimer County, do we even need to decide whether there was jurisdiction to for the commission to decide this issue?
I think you do, because I think because the commission has concurrent jurisdiction, in my view. It doesn't have the right to say we don't have jurisdiction. And in fact, it didn't say. It said we don't have jurisdiction because there's a written agreement. And the Grindberg case, which is the one that's been referred to, was a case that dealt with the payment of proceeds, where people had a disagreement about what the document said. Here, we didn't have that disagreement. And frankly, I think the commission should be encouraged to take disputes about where wells are located when that's an issue that is at the very heart of their authority and power. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time if I could.
Sure.
Unless there are other questions.
No, that's fine. You can reserve.
You may reserve the rest of your time. That's fine.
Thank you.
Before you get started, let me ask you if you are going to present the entire argument or whether you're going to divide your time.
Yes, sir. I would hope to stop at approximately 3 to 4 minutes so that counsel for Magpie Operating, John Jacobs, could also make some comments.
Okay. I'll keep my eyes open for 3 or 4 minutes.
May it please the court, my name is Assistant Attorney General Jake Matter. Bar number 32155. I represent the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the state agency charged with regulating the responsible development of Colorado's oil and natural gas resources in a manner consistent with public health, safety, welfare, and the environment. After two full evidentiary hearings, the commission properly determined that the surface owner's entire 80-acre private farm was not entitled to DOA status under Commission Rule 603D and properly issued a heavily conditioned permit to drill to Magpie Operating. The Commission's decisions are fully supported by the facts in the record and were legally correct. The Commission's decisions and the District Court order affirming those decisions should be affirmed by this court. I intend to focus my time today on the elements of the designated outside activity area rule in Rule 603D. The first is the numbers component, which refers to 20 people in 40 days. The second is the occupy component of the rule. Third is the well-defined area concept within the rule. And lastly, the public assembly component of the rule.
Before you start on the numbers, is it fair to decide that the 500 people element is not at issue at all?
Yes, that's correct. The sole basis for the application in this case was 20 people in 40 days, not the alternative 500 people in 3 days.
Okay. So in your brief, you spent some time possibly inserting words in the DOA, for example. You insert the words for 20 or more at the same time, or you argue in your brief, this has to be 20 or more at the same time. Why do you believe that should be read into the DOA?
Well, two principal reasons. One is the legislative history, which is in the record, I believe, at page 386 and approximately 480. The legislative history for the DOA rule in 1995, as well as the other discussions at the commission concerning the revisions to the rule 600 series setbacks requirements. And that provision of the rule, that section of the legislative history at the rulemaking states that this rule was intended to evacuate large numbers of people. And it refers to large congregations of people.
Mr. Manor, how is that at all consistent with the example in the DORA regulation itself that refers to a playground? Because in a playground, you're likely to have people coming and going, not all there at the same time.
Sure. I think it's fair to say that there may be some playgrounds that only have five people present at one time. However, I think the rule is properly applied to those playgrounds where there are 20 or more people.
But the rule doesn't say that you have to have 20 people there at the same time. It just says 20 or more people on at least 40 days. So if you had 10 people in the morning and 10 people in the afternoon at a playground, wouldn't that satisfy the terms of the rule?
I don't think that is the proper reading of the rule. And I think there's additional support in Rule 603D, which is the immediately preceding rule, which speaks to public assembly buildings or assembly buildings. And assembly buildings is an alternative way to achieve a heightened setback under Rule 603C. An assembly building is a defined term of art in the 100 series of the rules, the commission rules, which refers to a structure such as a church or a restaurant or a place where people are awaiting public transportation, provided there are 50 or more people who regularly gather there. So I think that rule read in conjunction, read together, the 603 series rules require the presence in the numerous people being there at the same time. And I think that is also supported by the common understanding of the word occupy. For example, Occupy Denver, people are not passing through the park. They're there for a fixed period of time. There's some permanence. We're not saying they need to camp out, but there need to be people there in a sort of a critical mass of numbers. And that's what the legislative history speaks to, is the ability to provide an extra margin of safety in terms of getting first responder equipment in the event of a disaster, in the event of a well blowout or a fire, or sort of the worst case scenario, the ability to get people out of the area quickly and the ability to get the proper equipment to the emergency situation.
Your 603D argument, could you tell me where it is in your briefs, where you raised that?
My 603C argument pertaining to
the public assembly buildings.
It's not in my brief.
Okay, so
it is, I believe, an additional basis, an alternative basis for affirming the district court.
I see, but you've raised it for the first time here at oral argument.
That's correct, and okay. That concerned me too. So I did a little bit of research under the Farmers Group versus Williams, 805 P. 2nd, 419, Colorado Supreme Court states, it is settled law that a respondent may defend the judgment of the trial court or the court of appeals on any grounds supported in the record. And in this case, it doesn't require additional facts to construe Rule 603, primarily as a matter of statutory construction. And again, the same discussion is in the legislative history. They're talking about revisions to Rule 603 at the pages that I referenced. But I will readily concede that I should have made that argument in my briefs.
Go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Mayor, is it your position that you can only get a DORA for a place of public assembly?
I believe that parenthetical is an important part of the rule. And it's consistent with the one prior occasion, the Sandstone Ranch, where the city of Longmont sought to apply for a DOA for 400 acres, and at the end of the day, the commission granted a DOA for 40 acres.
Well, I'm wondering how you reach that conclusion grammatically, because the rule says, such as a playground, recreation area, outdoor theater, or other place of public assembly. And so, and that's all in parentheses, as you know. And such as seems to be indicating at the beginning that those are examples, but there's no language that I see that specifically says that a DOA must be a place of public assembly.
I agree that obviously that parenthetical speaks to the character of the place. And in my view, it's not dispositive in this case. I think the evidence was mixed, but certainly this isn't analogous to a very public place of assembly, in our view, where there are barriers to entry. You need to know who to call. If you're going to show up, you need to be with a trainer approved by Mrs. Chase. Mrs. Chase will be there at all times. She can shut the door and turn off the lights if she wishes to at any time, and this place will never be available. To the extent it's available publicly now, it could be unavailable tomorrow if this designation were granted. So I think that is sort of a softer element, if you will. The fourth element, being public assembly, I think is less clear than the first three.
Back to the golf course analogy, though, I've taken up golf, so I know that at the public courses, you can't get on the golf course without a reservation. They have many, many rules about how fast you have to be, whether you have to rent a cart or push another something else. You have to have your own set of clubs and so on. I assume this is for safety, but I don't know. When you're having horses, I mean, a horse is a huge animal. And wouldn't it come down to safety? Some of what is established is for the protection of the juveniles who ride there and the others?
Sure, in terms of the scheduling and the... Right. I think it's more akin to a private country club that you need to know a member. There's no signage here, but I'm not sure that the court needs to struggle with that. Certainly the commission struggled with whether the character of this property truly satisfied the public criteria, but the truest struggle that they had was whether or not the boundaries of this 77-acre property were used in a sufficient manner. And the evidence at the hearing clearly showed that the southern portion of the property, which is the larger portion of the property, was not used. The testimony by Ms. Chase was this area was not available for activities the vast majority of the time due to the haying operations.
That's separate and apart from what you have to occupy, how much of the time, weren't there also issues meeting the 40-day and a 12-month requirement?
Yes,
could you speak to that?
Absolutely. As a threshold matter, the commission really struggled with whether the numbers component was satisfied here. Commissioner Cutright found that the numbers are in question. Commissioner Allward found that we may question the accuracy of some of these numbers. The calendars themselves conflicted with one another. The calendars were prepared solely for purposes of litigation, and the surface owners disagreed among themselves as to whether the requisite numbers of people were on site at any given time.
In terms of reviewing, we must give deference. We know the standard, and I appreciate what you're saying. I'm glad you mentioned this. Where can we find in the record the exact reasons why the commissioners denied it?
Sure. I think you need to look in two places. Number one is the deliberations themselves.
And where is that in the record?
The Cutler quote that I just made begins on page 150.
I know you, in your briefs, and I thank you for this, you both quoted different members of the commission, but is there one order that we can look
at? There is one order, and it's on page 490.
Okay.
And it states there were questions as to whether the property fit within the definition of designated outside activity area.
Did they explain why?
There was not a tremendous amount of discussion in the order, page 490.
Was there any discussion other than that it didn't fit?
The deliberations themselves from the hearing on the DOA application started about page 150 in the record, and then page 490 is the final order, which is being appealed.
So as I understand it, Mr. Matter, your view is that we're in the commission's report where it said that there were questions about the definition or whether the definition was met, that you're interpreting that to have to apply to the numbers component.
Well, the numbers component, the occupy component, that's correct.
Okay.
What I articulated as the elements of the claim,
right?
I believe the record at page 490 states the commission found that the elements were not satisfied, to paraphrase that order.
How do we review that, though, unless we know exactly what they were?
I think it's analogous to the situation where Well, actually, I have a case for that. The deliberations can be construed as legislative history and should be read in conjunction with that final order. And the case for that is the Board of County Commissioners versus the Water Quality Control Commission, which is 809 P. 2nd, 1107.
Yes. Was that case cited in your briefs?
No, it was not.
Okay, just in the future, we would appreciate it if, I think it's under Rule 28, that you notify us and opposing counsel beforehand, before you're introducing new materials.
And I apologize.
When you're done, I will ask Mr. Barber if he wishes an opportunity to respond to this case and the other matter that you mentioned.
Thank you. Yes, if the district court order be affirmed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Matter.
May it please the court, John Jacobs, attorney registration 14139.
Mr. Jacobs, I apologize that because of the number of our questions, you don't have your 3 to 4 minutes, and I wasn't as diligent as I should have been. But
so noted, and no apology necessary. Appreciate the court's time. MAGPI supports the argument of Assistant Attorney General Jake Matter for the Capelli Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. We wish to add only a couple of brief points for the court's consideration. First, we emphasize that the entire approach to this appeal rests on the faulty premise that the requirements for obtaining a designation of their private horse farm as an outside activity area were satisfied, as evidenced by the calendars that they each prepared for the sole purpose of obtaining such designation and preventing oil and gas activity on their property. As such, the calendars should constitute inadmissible hearsay under Colorado law, because they are not reliable and do not satisfy any exception to the rule against hearsay.
Is that I? Go ahead.
Mr. Jacobs, even if we ignore the calendars, Mr. Sutak and Ms. Chase both testified to what was in the calendars. And so isn't their testimony admissible and something?
These calendars were the only record of their recollection of specific dates. The calendars themselves disagreed with one another. They were only prepared after withdrawing or suspending their initial application. They were prepared for 12 months. Then they didn't prepare them any further. It was solely for the litigation. This is clear in their deposition testimony in the record, as well as in their testimony at the hearing.
My question was, did anyone object?
We did. We filed a motion to exclude the day before the hearing in February. It was summarily denied, primarily to allow everything to be heard and considered by the commission. But I would add that the commission's collective concerns about the reliability of the calendars are clearly stated in the record. And that's in their deliberations in the record of the DOAA hearing in February of 2010 at 149, page 149, beginning line 12, through page 163, line 2. That's the entire deliberations. We would simply add that MAGPIES is anxious to have the uncertainty of successive pending appeals resolved as quickly as possible. So we need to get about the business of utilizing the APD issued by the commission and meeting our obligations as the lessee to the state land board and develop the oil and gas through completion of the state Chase 3336 well. The service owner's appeals have been a significant burden to MAGPIE. MAGPIE is a small family-owned business. It survived the economic turmoil of the 2008 recession, ensuing energy commodity price volatility, intervening regulatory changes, and is now anxious to proceed with its plans to drill. We urge the court not to delay its decision, and we would greatly welcome a decision prior to November. We have surface occupancy restrictions under our APD, and so we may only drill in the winter months between November and, I believe, March. And so a decision by then would be most appreciated. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobs.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Mr. Barber, before you begin, I would like to ask you if you would like an opportunity to respond in writing to the reference to the regulation 603C and also to the Board of County Commissioners case at 809 P. 2nd, 1107 that were cited by Mr. Matter.
I would, Your Honor.
Okay, if you could respond by Monday in a letter form directed to the three of us, and I would say three pages double space. Does that sound satisfactory to you?
I think that should be more than satisfactory.
Okay, very well.
Thank you. Let me review the actual ruling in this case, by the agency, which is what this court reviews on this appeal. Paragraph 7 of the report, I think they call it. I do not have the citation to the page in the record, but it's clearly in the record. States, quote, Ms. Chase testified that more than 20 people used the property on 45 to 50 days in 2009, and that the property is open to the public with supervision by approved trainers, end quote. And then at paragraph 10, the commission found, as far as the commission heard testimony from applicant Mike Sutak, that all of the land comprising Moki Meadows is used as an equestrian center for three-day eventing. He counted at least 20 people who used the property 43 days that year. And there's no finding anywhere in this report that this was controverted or was rejected.
Mr. Barber, even if it wasn't expressly controverted, isn't it within the discretion of the commission to accept or reject or partially accept that testimony?
Had the commission done that, I suppose it is within their discretion. But this panel does not have a basis to conclude that's why the commission rejected the application.
Well, then let me ask you the question that I asked Mr. Matter. What is your interpretation of the language in the commission's order that says that the commission had questions about whether the definition was met?
It's totally ambiguous. I can't tell you. It doesn't give you anything to go by is all I can say, Your Honor.
Well, don't the deliberations of the commissioners following the hearing help elaborate on what they meant?
Two of the commissioners raised the issue of whether the number of people had been satisfied. There were three who accepted the numbers, and there were three or four who said nothing about the numbers. So to find that that was the basis for the denial, I think, is a real stretch in this matter.
So if are you then suggesting that we, if this is something that we're concerned about, that the appropriate remedy would be to remand to the commission for further, more specific findings?
I believe that the words of the regulation, which is found in two places. It's in the 100 series, where designated outside activity area is defined. And then in 603D, which states that the boundary, or the closest there can be oil and gas operations, is 350 feet from the boundary of that designated outside activity area. Because those words are unambiguous, and because the definition has a very specific set of elements that have to be met. Those elements were met, and this court should reverse. This is not a matter where the commission should be allowed to say, we like soccer fields, but we don't like baseball fields. We like goats, but we don't like horses. If you meet the numbers, if you meet the days, if it's a defined area, you should be given the designation. Otherwise, it will allow the commission just to create ad hoc rules without any basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barber.
Other questions?
No.
I don't think so. Thank you, Mr. Barber. Thank you, Mr. Matter and Mr. Jacobs. We appreciate all of your arguments this afternoon on this case. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.